The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
To a new episode of Sox Machine Live, I am Josh Nelson alongside Jim Margulis, the managing editor of SoxMachine.com. It is Thursday night, November 2nd, 2023, as we are live streaming this episode on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. And for those that are listening to the audio version of this show, you can subscribe to the Sox Machine podcast wherever you listen to podcasts such as Spotify and Apple Music. Quite a bit to talk about here, as last night, the Texas Rangers had a very tight game. Zach Gallen was outstanding for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He was no-hitting the Texas Rangers halfway through the game. And in true Texas Rangers fashion, the offense comes around late, the eighth inning, a big Marcus Semien home run, and the Texas Rangers win game 5-5, and they win the World Series in 5 games. And Jim, as far as the World Series goes, after game one was very entertaining, and the Diamondbacks own game two. The Diamondbacks blew out the Rangers. So maybe as an Arizona Diamondbacks fan, you feel like, hey, we should be up 2-0. But what's so impressive about this World Series win for the Texas Rangers, they went undefeated on the road. Like the White Sox did that in 2005, mm-hmm. right? The White Sox went 6-0 on the road. The Rangers went 11-0 in this postseason on the road. That's incredible.
Yeah, the White Sox had home field advantage for their entire run through the American League, so they didn't have to worry about like starting a series away from then U.S. Cellular Field. So they had the ability to get leads, set up pitching staffs the way they want to, get in the other team's bullpen, etc. And that's worked out well for them. So yeah, the Rangers did it a little bit with a higher degree of difficulty, but I think they showed the depth of the American League and just how good and challenging that AL West was. On the other hand, with the Diamondbacks, like, just showed they were a little bit underpowered, which I think was the knock on them going into the October, was just like the home run power isn't quite there. Starting yeah. pitching was a little thin. Like they play well as a team. They defend well, cover ground, steal some bases, really excel at the margins, but just do they have enough to keep up with teams that can hit the ball out of the park and teams that have like a starting rotation? And like the Rangers maybe had like one more pitcher than Diamondbacks did, but I guess if you don't have the kind of home run power to knock a starting pitcher out of the game and you can let Andrew Heaney go five, I think that was pretty much the moment where like the Diamondbacks lost their ability to punch their way back in the series by letting Heaney go five. You know, I guess Bochy mismanaged that game a little bit by having DeClercq come in at the very end. It seemed a little bit unnecessary, kind of overreacting to a closing margin late that presented a slight opportunity, but still required the offense to hit Nate Eovaldi, and they couldn't quite do it. So, yeah, I think the better team won, and that's good both from a White Sox perspective because, like, the Rangers spent. The Rangers spent on premium talent, and there's Corey Seager, and there's Marcus Semien. doing the heavy lifting offensively, defensively, coming through with big hits, big moments, playing really fine defense when you needed it. On the other hand, like the Diamondbacks prove that, like, if you slip in, like, there's always a chance of just like getting into the World Series if you just like get into the sixth wild card spot. But it helps to have that talent. It helps to have that extra pitcher. It helps to have that home run power that the White Sox currently lack. So I think, like, either one presents an example for the White Sox to learn from, but the better example, the example that's more fun and less reliant on luck, prevailed here.
And this picture always makes me laugh, but congrats to Dane Dunning and Marcus Semien, old friends. Dane Dunning is a champion. And the photo that I'm using for our podcast listeners of the play-by-play, I forgot what season this was for. It's like a spring training opening day headshot where he just has this really goofy smile on his face and he's got the rec specs on. I absolutely love it. And I'm happy for Dane Dunning and Marcus Semien to get their World Series rates. But I just had to use this photo. I tweeted it out last night. And Dane Dunning, Marcus Semien, old friends and now champions, Jim.
Yeah, Dane Dunning has won one. Adam Eaton has won one. So slowly but surely, the pieces are coming together for the entire, all the participants in the trade working out. And I guess we'll have to see, what exactly happens with, like, Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez ending up in the same place. Lance Lynn probably out of the plan, so you can't quite count him. Like, Chris Sale has won one. So we're seeing, like, different of these trades winning rings, but none of them are on the White Sox. It's if Lucas Giolito, and I think Lopez has to move with them wherever they go, right?
They're a tandem.
Yeah. So they ride a bicycle built for two everywhere they go. And I think, if they win it next, then you know that trade is basically cursed. The White Sox, the rebuild was just like, they didn't do enough. And now the baseball gods are just hammering that on them over and over again with, like, nope. See what happens when you, make trades that go for, when you have Dave Dombrowski leading the charge. See what happens when you hire Bruce Bochy and sign premium free agents. Like, all these different templates to learn from that the White Sox never did.
Yeah, Jose Quintana hasn't won a World Series yet. But yeah, to your point, like with the rebuild trades, it's kind of funny. It'd be interesting if everyone the White Sox traded away to start that rebuild, to supposedly start this contention window, ended up winning a World Series elsewhere, like defeating the purpose.
Quintana's on the Mets. So, I mean, like, he's it wouldn't be, that's not the trade. He's not with the team that landed him. But yeah, it would be the same thing where just like he's still around and helping. If they get the right manager, can solve some of their issues.
Now, with the Texas Rangers winning the World Series, the MLB offseason officially begins. So we do get some awards coming in and some good news on the White Sox front. As long as he still remains with the Chicago White Sox organization, time will tell. Liam Hendricks wins Comeback Player of the Year for Major League Baseball. And when it comes to voting as far as Comeback Player of the Year, this seems to be a pretty easy slam dunk, right, Jim, when it comes to MLB voters for this particular award. For Hendricks and his well-known battle with cancer to come back, even though he didn't pitch much in the major leagues, the fact that he pitched at all was quite impressive.
Yeah, and I think this is a case where, like, there might have been other Comeback Player of the Year candidates who produced more. But I remember when Adam Dunn had the terrible year and then he bounced back, and like they talk about Comeback Player of the Year, and it's like, it's an award you don't really want to win because that means something terrible happened, especially like if you do it like Adam Dunn, where like you just had like a terrible season the year before, not injured, you didn't lose the entire year. You just, were in a funk that turned into almost like a historically awful season. He just didn't reach the amount of plate appearances to actually qualify for the batting title, but would have had the lowest batting average by plenty, even if you gave him a hit in every single missing at bat that he had. Like, I think if he went like 12 for 12, he still would have set the record by far. But yeah, it's a case where like you aren't seeing people who are second and third being like, crap, like I should have, that award should have been mine. Like it's kind of nice if you win, but depending on why you were in rough shape the year before, like you may not want to dwell on that too much. And it's a case of like Liam Hendricks, like severe misfortune. He battled back from it, was, you know, not only on the field, but off the field, like very, you know, very proactive with using the attention he was receiving to direct it to causes that helped him out and organizations and such. And, you know, meeting with cancer victims as he's going along, or cancer patients, I should say, going, you know, city to city, even when he's on the injured list. So he did a lot, even, you know, when you take away his five appearances on the field and say, like, yeah, it just, it was a story worth, you know, it was a comeback that's worth honoring and seeing all the way through. And even if somebody, you know, don't have anybody offhand, but just, you know, if somebody came from Tommy John surgery and pitched 200 mm-hmm. innings, be like, yeah, you know, it's, you know, good for Liam Hendricks. Not going to complain. I don't think you have any incentives in contract saying, like, if you win comeback player of the year, you get an extra $50,000 the following year. So I think it's a case where everybody's happy. Like, yeah, that's Liam Hendricks had the comeback story of the year. No question.
And with the MLB offseason, we'll get more awards. We'll get the Gold Gloves. The Silver Slugger nominees are being announced. We'll see where Luis Robert Jr. stacks up with those awards. He's going to be the only one. After a 101 loss season, he's the only one that we can look forward to as far as having any remote shot of winning any awards. So the focus now for everybody in Major League Baseball is to start prepared for the 2024 season. And the White Sox made another hire into their front office. They hired Paul Janish, who now had the player development. He'll be the new director of player development for the Chicago White Sox, taking over the role that Chris Getz used to have with the Chicago White Sox before Getz took over as the general manager of the Chicago White Sox. And Paul Janish, former major leaguer, the new White Sox director of player development. He's in charge of every farm system the White Sox have as far as minor league affiliates, Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, Birmingham, and Charlotte. And outside of his major league career, when he retired, Paul Janish went back to his alma mater, to Rice University down in Houston, Texas, to become their associated head coach, which is their assistant head coach. And in college baseball, if you're not familiar, you're only allowed to pay three coaches, your head coach and two assistant coaches. So Paul Janish did have a paid coaching job with Rice University, and he was also their head baseball recruiter for the university. This is an interesting hire, Jim, from the perspective of the direction that the White Sox went to take to replace Chris Getz, I should say, to head up an entire farm system. I do not doubt Paul Janish's ability to identify and develop talent. That's what he's been doing on a college baseball level, taking high schoolers, 18 years old, sometimes 17 years old, work them through your camps, fall ball, and of course the spring season, and watch them grow from their freshman year to junior year. And if they're worthwhile, get drafted in the major leagues, and seeing new faces all the time and going out there and scouting and watching these high school baseball players and recruiting them to go play for Rice University. Those are unique skill sets that Paul Janish has. Has he ever managed four minor league affiliates at the same time? Has he ever managed 100+ players in a pipeline? I don't know, and he may not have, and he may have to lean on Chris Getz on how to do that, and I'm not exactly sure if Chris Getz was even good at that particular job. So that's why I'm a bit curious in the direction that the White Sox are going. I have other ideas of what this could mean as far as the whole entire organization viewpoint, but Jim, what are your thoughts about Paul Janish now going from Rice University to now being the player development director for the Chicago White Sox?
Well, for one, I'll be able to keep him straight when it comes to, like, for the years they overlapped, I always had to remember which one was Paul Janish and which one was Paul DeYoung. The soft J's, the Pauls with the soft J's made me, you know, always had to figure out which was the journeyman, which was the Cardinals, and now I'll have them fixed in my brain. So there's that. The question I think with Janish is he the director of player development, or with Josh Barfield there, is he more the assistant director of player development with Barfield executing like or you know, having a stronger hand in the sayings initially as this new administration tries to get off the ground? Because like if Janish is like the assistant, then like that's fine. Like, former pros with some either, you know, front office or roving instructor, or in this case, college experience, that tends to be like a title that they break in with, and then they, you know, go up the chain if they show an acumen for it, or if they show a desire to keep doing it. So like, that doesn't strike me as like, you know, in that situation that Giannis is like, fine, he's probably just a guy right now, and we'll see what happens. But like the way Chris Getz touted him, like reading from his quote in the press release saying, you know, with 13 years in professional baseball, including 9 in the major leagues and another 6 years at Rice University, where he served as associate head coach, and then he said like, and then coaching successfully at a high level program like Rice, like, did he coach successfully? Like, they haven't had a winning season since he's been there, whether unpaid or paid role. Like, they just seem like an unremarkable, also ran in Conference USA. So like, I don't know if he's successful. I don't know if a case like Rice, you know, which, you know, has had some high times and low times, like whether it's hard to be successful there, especially like in with the transfer portal, like if that makes it harder on a team like them. And so they'll just be kind of cursed to be a second division club in college baseball, unless they have some, you know, some hot years where they get the right transfers or players don't transfer. But like, that's a case where like, you know, if I'm reading that quote and then Getz is trying to sell me on the director, like I'm thinking like, nah, not quite there yet. Like, I'm not buying it. Like, have to see it to believe it. Not going to rule them out entirely, but there's nothing in the body of work that shows that. And I wrote in my post about this afternoon saying like, I couldn't quite tell the overlap. I couldn't find any professional overlap with Getz and Giannis, or Barfield and Giannis. You know, Brian Bannister, like he was briefly with the Royals AAA team, but not that time that overlapped with anybody else. Couldn't find any connection. And then our friend Larry from our Southside Sox days shot me a tweet saying that Giannis and Barfield are high school buddies, played on the same travel team in Houston. So that's like, yeah, there's your personal connection. So if it's a case where like, you know, we have a director position. I think he could be good at it, but he's going to basically be the assistant or associate director while we get this thing off the ground, and it'll be good like training wheels for him. Then sure, you know, he's as fit as anybody else who would take that kind of job, and we'll see what he does with it. But yeah, based on what Barfield said about him being more invested in player development early, even if he is the assistant GM theoretically overseeing more departments than that, like that makes me think that he's essentially the director of player development, and the person who has the title is somebody who can be in more of a trainee role.
The problem you run into that is that Josh Barfield could suddenly be stretched thin. Like, if Josh Barfield, Jim, is responsible for the future of the Chicago White Sox, having the scouts report to him, working with Mike Shirley, have they made any changes in the international front? I know Chris Getz mentioned that, but I haven't seen any news if Marco Patti is still with the organization or not. I'm assuming he still is.
Yeah, I would assume no news means everything's the same. Like, if Marco Patti were fired, you'd hear about it.
Got it. So Josh Barfield, like, trying to figure out White Sox organization. If he's in charge of like the future White Sox players, who they draft, who they sign internationally, maybe sign post MLB draft, the non-draftees. Okay, so he's got the assistant GM role. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work to manage in your baseball organization, to also then try to advise Chris Getz on who they should target in trades and free agents. You get stretched thin real quick. And yeah, that's where like Paul Giannis, my perspective is, I think he would actually be a great asset to Mike Shirley, because the two would actually be competing against one another when it comes to scouting high school players. Mm-hmm. That was Giannis's job, is to find high school recruits and convince him to come to Rice University. So I like it from like that perspective of, if the White Sox direction moving forward is to draft more high schoolers to get younger in the farm system, then I definitely see Paul Giannis being an asset. But this job, the director of player development, again, you're overseeing four teams: Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, Birmingham, and Charlotte, not one team. So to have somebody be very green. Yeah, and that's a good point. The leagues in Arizona and the Dominican. Okay, so yeah. So six affiliates, Jim. Like, this is not an easy job. And that's where I'm a bit hesitant. I am a bit concerned. This is a lot of work for Paul Janish to step into, and maybe he's ready for it. Maybe he's got a great game plan. Maybe he's got a 300-page binder ready to go and hit the ground running for the Chicago White Sox. But as far as like the organization, this is why the Los Angeles Dodgers have like 90 people in their front office, right? Because they have like 20 to 30 people who just focus on this one area. Meanwhile, the White Sox have two guys, Josh Garfield and Paul Janish. Like, I wish Janish the best of luck. I'm really curious on how he's going to help out, especially if the White Sox do decide to target younger players. I do think he could be an asset, but it is going to be a lot to manage the affiliates.
Yeah, I mean, they have added a few positions to help out. Like, Josh Barfield was a new position for assistant GM, like Jeremy Haber, still on the organizational chart. So he's not replacing Jeremy Haber. There are two assistant GMs where previously there was one. Gene Watson, now aboard as director of player personnel. So that could be a case of like him, you know, that position being somewhat of an assistant GM to free up Josh Barfield to be more hands-on with the minor league system. Because like there, you know, you'll have Gene Watson there doing some of the grunt work for just up and down stuff, you know, promotions, et cetera. Like you're taking care of just roster moves, et cetera. So like they have added some bodies, but yeah, they're, you know, it's very piecemeal at this point. It's very incremental. And I think it's probably going to be a multi-year proposition of trying to figure out who's exactly doing what, who reports to what. Like I remember when Matt Lyle was brought on to be like the first White Sox first attempt at being like the hitting director. And like, remember all his YouTube videos and be like, oh, this guy is, you know, really advanced and doing stuff the White Sox had never done before. And then he lasted a year because he just didn't really fit with what the White Sox were doing. You know, nobody really listened to him. They didn't have like a proper structure for him to really fit in. So he was just kind of preaching and, you know, nobody's really listening. And so it could be a case of just like, after a year, maybe Paul Janish goes and they hire somebody else based on just what they feel like they need. So, or maybe they add more positions up top to keep bulking up the front office. So if Chris Getz, you know, is somebody who is trying to play the long game with Jerry Reinsdorf and is like trying to manage upwards in terms of saying like, yeah, we can compete, we can hit the ground running, but is also of the mind of just like, no, we can't hit the ground running. Like we're not in shape to, you know, he's trying to like, you know, get the job, but then like actually do the job well. It probably, you probably have to wait to judge a couple things in terms of just exactly what he's trying to do with the structure of the front office. Because I don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf or somebody like, yeah, we're going to invest, you know,
right,
$5 million, $10 million into new positions in the front office in 1 year. It's going to be like a multi-year thing. We're just like, can I have another, you know, 200,000 for this? Can I have another, like just, you know, year after year, kind of adding and adding and adding and hope that, you know, there are some results that allow you to keep building. But that's kind of my read on the situation when it comes to what Chris Getz is trying to do. It like is, you know, I think same kind of thing with Pedro Grifol. Like I think right now, Grifol is the manager because Jerry Reinsdorf wants him to be the manager. So Getz has to play along and play nice and stay in Reinsdorf's favor. But then, like, you know, if you see the, you know, hiring Brian Bannister, trying to hire a new hitting infrastructure, like he's trying to make changes around that. I imagine when it comes to the minor league system, when it comes to the size of the front office, it will be similar. That there won't be any kind of windfall or that new ownership brings with like, yeah, we're moneyballing this or we're, you know, Houston Astros-ing this or whatever you want to call it for having a modern sized front office. Instead, it's going to be this piece by piece, position by position, hoping to keep adding. And then if you have to subtract guys, hopefully you don't lose that position. You know, Reinsdorf doesn't see it as inessential.
We did get this comment during our YouTube stream from As In Rec. As In Rec wrote to us that Vinny Duber, who is the beat reporter for CHGO of the Chicago White Sox, in his story, he wrote that the Paul Janish said that White Sox ex-skipper Tony La Russa is, quote, in some of our meetings. And we know that Tony is involved. I think there's been a lot of outcry on social media right now, when it comes to Tony La Russa being involved. You were in Birmingham, Jim, and you were told that La Russa was.
Yeah, I didn't see him, but yeah, I guess he was there throughout the week.
Yeah. So, yeah, we know that La Russa is involved. He is the eyes and ears for Jerry Reinsdorf in these meetings. That's just my working assumption on why Tony is there. But yeah, so Paul Yadish, best of luck. He's the new director of player development, taking over for Chris Getz. He is now in charge of the White Sox farm system. Big job. And I'm not going to say a lot is riding on Paul Yadish, but the White Sox have some interesting pieces, especially with how the Arizona Fall League is unfolding. Brian Ramos, Colson Montgomery, they're hitting a lot better as the season continues on with how the season started for them down in Arizona. Then there's all the pitchers that the White Sox have acquired, but there's much work to be done. So be interested to see on how Paul Yadish is going to attack this new role with the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah. The good news is like he doesn't have a hard act to follow. The bad news is that act he's following is now the GM.
Yeah. It's his boss. Yeah. Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When it comes to the MLB offseason, so it has started on November 2nd, 10 days. Okay, so by November 12th, there are some decisions to be made across Major League Baseball in the next 5 days as we are streaming this live. So if you're listening to the podcast, it'll be 4 more days that teams that are going to be free agents have this window to re-sign with their existing ball club. So the Atlanta Braves signed reliever Joe Jimenez to a 3-year contract. Max Muncy is going to be staying with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So there was an option, and the Dodgers signed Muncy to a new 2-year, $24 million contract. There is a third-year club option for $10 million. So it can be three years, $34 million in total. But Max Muncy will be staying with the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's the biggest name so far that has re-signed. But there's a lot more decisions to be made in the next 10 days, especially for the Chicago White Sox and the rest of Major League Baseball. But for those that have been participating in the offseason plan project, you guys already know this. And I'm really enjoying all the offseason plans that have been posted on SoxMachine.com. I think there have been some great ideas. We'll be touching on some of those ideas some of our favorite ideas in upcoming podcast episodes. But today I posted my off-season plan on SoxMachine.com. And this is an opportunity, Jim, for you to critique or let's just straight up make fun of my off-season plan. Because I got to tell you, folks, this was not easy. Like, trying to come up with the plan that kind of made sense in trying to accomplish what Jerry Reinsdorf wants this upcoming season, which is supposedly contend, while trying to not mortgage any avenues or paths in 2025 as far as trading away any talent you have, is a really tricky balance. And I'm not entirely sold on myself with the plan that I have put together that this is going to contend with the Minnesota Twins for the American League Central. But for those that didn't get a chance to read my plan yet, and those that are watching YouTube or listening to the podcast, so my off-season plan, Jim, starts with some unrealistic things, like things that are definitely not going to happen, but I am pretty stronghold, like this is a hill that I'm willing to die on, should happen. What is going on with Craig Counsell is surprising me. And I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, where I thought maybe Counsell would take some time off to be with his family. That was the early rumor coming out of Milwaukee. Because he's going to be a free agent right now on November 2nd. Craig Counsell is a manager free agent. His contract with the Milwaukee Brewers expired on Halloween. And I thought maybe just take a break. However, Counsell has interviewed with the Cleveland Guardians because Terry Francona is not coming back for health reasons. The Guardians were paying Francona $4.5 million a season. If they're willing to continue paying that amount, well, that's a lot more than what Craig Counsell was making in Milwaukee. And of course, with David Stearns taking over with the New York Mets and the Mets parting ways with Buck Showalter and they need a manager, well, all of a sudden the poor Milwaukee Brewers are looking at a very good manager who has a good track record with that organization, having incredible leverage, Jim. And my first unrealistic part of my offseason plan, fire Pedro Grifol and damn it, hire Craig Counsell. Who cares if you are paying three managers? The Las Vegas Raiders right now have to pay their two head coaches, John Gruden and Josh McDaniel, like $80 million over the next five seasons. There are worse situations in professional sports right now. I'm sure there are some universities that are paying like four head coaches right now in football. But go ahead, fire Pedro Grifol, hire Craig Counsell. I would feel a lot better about the White Sox chances in 2024 and beyond if they went this route, Jim.
Yeah, I'm trying to think where I saw it. I think it was an Athletic article where they talked about Counsell and just like he's keeping an open mind because like there was a source close to him saying like he wants to set the market rate for managers. Like he wants to raise the pay floor for managers. Like it's very important to him. So, you know, the Mets make a lot of sense because of David Stearns and what Steve Cohen is willing to spend. The Guardians also make a fair amount of sense because like they kept Terry Francona. And like for as long as he was there, you never heard about like Francona, you know, entertaining other jobs, anybody like buying him away from Cleveland. Like I think they took care of him pretty well. And it makes sense because like if you pay your manager like an extra $1 million, you might be able to save how many millions when it comes to like playing young players, like integrating your farm system into your 26-man roster, piecing together platoons for cheaper, working around like bullpen days and such. Like if your manager is really good at working with the ingredients you have, then that probably saves so much money that, yeah, may as well, if Francona wants, $4 million instead of three, give it to him. Because like, if you go to like a Pedro Grifol type who can only manage half the roster because he's scared of the other half, like that just might, backfire and everything and just set him back, 2 years and cost him how much money. So that's why I think the Guardians make some sense. If the Guardians see Counsell as a similar thing, and sure enough, like when you look at the rosters the Brewers put out and how much patching they do along the way to get a lineup working and to get enough of a pitching staff going, like he is cut from the same cloth, I think, and just being like, yeah, I'll work with what you give me. You'll go for it. I'll have some input, but you know, ultimately, like, I'll find a way to get it done. So I think the Guardians make sense for him to look at and to pump his value. And I guess Milwaukee is still in play if they pony up. And you know,
if they pony up,
yeah, which, you know, like, they might, just because like they're under the same smaller market pressures as Cleveland in terms of like how much money has Council saved them by maximizing the talent they've had on hand. So I think it's a very realistic, you know, equation they have to weigh, is just, you know, we might be paying Craig Council $2 million more than what we want to pay him, but will it work out? And, you know, or like, will it poison the water in terms of like, are our standards so high for him now that if one of their seasons goes sideways, do they start to hold it against them? Like, I can see it being a case of just, yeah, there is a case of when, once you're getting paid to what you're worth, the target's on your back a little bit. So that's something I think would be a pressure in Milwaukee that maybe isn't in New York, but that's, I think it makes sense for him to cast a wide net and not turn any jobs down that, or not turn any interviews down, I should say, where the organization has shown a pattern of treating their manager as well. I don't think Chicago is that, but yeah, I mean, if you're going to make, like, if you're going to like have a miracle turnaround with having a roster be greater than the sum of its parts, then it does take somebody like Council who has done that job in Milwaukee.
The last seven straight seasons in Milwaukee, the Brewers have exceeded their actual win total from their expected win total. That's impressive. The last six full 162-game seasons, the Milwaukee Brewers are averaging 90.6 wins per season. Could you imagine if the White Sox had that type of run? Man, we would... Mm-hmm. We'd be complaining that they haven't won a World Series, but at least they would be winning. You know, like, that would be an incredible stretch. And obviously Milwaukee's done a great job in player development, and they've done a great job strategically with their signings and trades. It's not all Craig Council, but Council's been a big part of why the Milwaukee Brewers have been successful as long as they have been, especially the last 662 game seasons. And man, if he's available and he still wants to manage, I'm not even thinking twice, whatever, you know, Pedro Grifol, you could join Lurie Garcia in the offseason home where White Sox just have these dead contracts, you know, go join Lurie over there in the corner. Craig, please save our clubhouse. Please save our team for 2024 and beyond.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out like who would be the most emblematic of like, getting, I guess Jeff Kepinger is like still the ultimate case of just the guy getting paid to not play for the White Sox, because they just like, after like months of rehabbing, trying to get back to the roster, Robin Ventura's like, nah. And like, nobody felt bad about him leaving. Just the other, yeah, I think Marcus Semien was the only one who had anything to say about him leaving. It's because he was a rookie and there's a microphone in front of him, and he said like, yeah, Kepinger was good to me as a rookie, and that's all he had to say. So yeah, probably Kepinger is the gold standard of getting paid.
My other parts of my plan, so the other big one, the big free agent signing, signed Jordan Montgomery. We talked about it in our previous episodes when we recapped the 2023 season for the White Sox starting pitchers, where we talked about it, set up the offseason plan project podcast. So if you haven't started your offseason plan, that's a great podcast episode to listen to as Jim and I walk through as far as some of the key decision-making and some of the key targets. This is a key target for me. We talked about it. He has, in the last three seasons, been very consistent for multiple teams, as he's been a hot trade commodity. He now wins a World Series ring with the Texas Rangers, and he could help someone like Dylan Cease man the starting rotation, 30-plus starts, 180-plus innings. Yes, there are those, especially our friend Biflo from the 108, that want to raise a red flag and say he has pitched a 20% increase in innings because of this postseason, so beware of regression in 2024. I totally buy that. That definitely is a thing, especially for pitchers that have a heavy workload like Jordan Montgomery did have. But this is a strong starting pitching class for free agents, a horrible free agent class for position players. We'll get to them in a moment. I can't help myself but laugh. And Jordan Montgomery can help at least get the starting rotation back in order. And even if you do believe in what the White Sox had acquired the trade deadline, Jim, for those pitching prospects, Jordan Montgomery could still be there to help lead the mantle, even if you can't re-sign Dylan Cease, because it's going to take a 4 or 5 year contract to sign Jordan Montgomery. So what do you think about Jordan Montgomery as my big free agent signing in the offseason plan?
I share the concerns of just him having a little bit of overwork to deal with, especially like if he goes to the White Sox, they need every single start out of him to maximize their win potential. But I like him in terms of if you're gunning for 2024 on paper, but also like 2025 or 26 is more important to you. I think he's probably one of the value pitchers here. Like if you're not going to spend Blake Snell money or Aaron Nola money, then probably Montgomery might be your next best bet signing a pitcher this year to help in 2026. Like he seems like, you know, he's gained velocity. He's not getting by on Kraft and Guile. He's got a couple of different fastballs that he can lean on depending on which way, which one's working better and which way league trends are going. So I like his profile to last. He's made every single start that you want to make over the last couple of years. So that's why I think I'm for it. But I do share Beef's concerns of like just, yeah, a lot of work and just might catch up to him at some point. And then it comes down to the White Sox sixth and seventh starters, which, as we know, has been a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a problem. But this is a classic example of, well, we may not be in position to take advantage of Jordan Montgomery in 2024. That's fine, because you have to sign him to a long-term deal. If you have any hopes of being good in 25, 26, or even 27, you're going to need a pitcher like Jordan Montgomery to help lead the starting rotation. You can't dictate when guys are going to be free agents from other teams. Other teams or those players dictate when they're going to be available. Jordan Montgomery is available now. Go sign him. You have the budget to do so. You have a lot of money coming off the books next year, and even have more money coming off the books in 2026. I think this is a worthy investment for the White Sox to make Jordan Montgomery their big free agent signing. And hey, they want to surprise me and they want to go sign Aaron Nola or Blake Snell. Hey, I will not stop them. That'll be fantastic ideas as well. But Jordan Montgomery was my target in the offseason plan project. All right. Now this is where it gets comical. The short-term deals. This is where things get a little loony. My short-term deal, signing Kevin Kiermaier to play right field. We talked about that. We both think that was a good idea. The middle infield, man, letting Tim Anderson go at $14 million. So you buy him out. That's $13 million. I take 10 and a half of that and sign Paul DeJong and Tony Kemp as the middle infield. So the White Sox, with my plan, having the worst middle infield in Major League Baseball with Tim Anderson and Elvis Andrus, going to the worst middle infield of Major League Baseball, but cheaper in Paul DeJong and Tony Kemp. The good news is that Paul DeJong is a better defensive shortstop than Tim Anderson. So at least that is where I'm hoping to get some value. Signing, I changed my mind because you made a good point. Mitch Garver, probably not a catcher, DH only. So I signed Gary Sanchez. And then to help fill out the starting rotation, Kenta Maeda and Alex Wood. All right, Jim, what do you think about my strategy of going crazy on the short-term signings in free agency?
It's not inspiring, but I can see where you're coming from. Like, just because, like, you're trying to get the White Sox to do something well. And so, like, when it comes to Kiermaier, DeJong, and Kemp to a lesser extent, like, that's a better defensive team, especially Kiermaier and Robert in the same outfield. Like, you're trying to find a way to beat projections, or, you know, in the case of beating projections, usually it comes down to bullpen, maximizing leads and winning one run games, like doing a lot with a little in terms of runs scored. So that is probably the best bet to do it with the money you have available and with the talent that's available on the open market. But yeah, it reminds me a little bit of like 1 or 2 years into a dynasty mode, or playing like MLB The Show, the road mode, where all of a sudden, like, look at the White Sox free agents leave, and it's like, they just sign anybody to one-year contracts, and then like after 3 years, a team's unrecognizable because it's just one-year contracts, and it's just all of a sudden, like, I guess Tony Kemp's starting. Like, Tony Kemp can start. Well, he's got a rating of 74, but everybody else has a rating of 67 and below. So I guess Tony Kemp is starting, and that's kind of what it reminds me of, just formulaic fill-in-the-gap type approach to, we need to fill a 26-man roster with major league talent, and these theoretically are major league talented players. I think the trick, or not the trick, but the trap of replacing somebody like Tim Anderson, and Beef mentioned this in the comments, saying DeJong is bad in a 2-win upgrade on Tim Anderson. When somebody's as bad as Anderson is, and we've seen this with right field and DH in previous years, like, if you go from like really, really, really bad to bad, it's still bad. Like, you don't feel that improvement. Like, if you're off the charts awful and you fill in somebody who's just like ordinarily mediocre, it doesn't resonate in terms of like how you build a team. Like, maybe results in like, it's, if you have that hitter batting ninth or whatever, over the course of the season, then, you know, maybe you'll be okay in the end. But when you look at the bench you have because of the money you have to spend to get started out, like, you need these guys to produce well enough to like beat projections. In that case, like, it's probably not going to work. But yeah, let's get to that bench.
I didn't even bother making a slide for the bench because it's, I looked at the bench and crashed. It's just my reaction right now, just laughter. That's what it was when I was writing up the plan. Like, the bench, who cares? Like, I'm honestly just thinking about, you know what? Hey, you're paying Leury García $5.5 million. Why not? You know, you can put on a uniform and pretend. So my bench,
I've been picturing out of shape Leury García, because like, you can always say about the guy who's always in like great shape. I'm just picturing him like 40 pounds overweight, the spare tire, trying to like fit into his old uniform, like, because he's been just having just like too many beach days or something like that. Like, I'd want to see that, like, stubble, cigarette dangling out of his mouth, old time spring training where you use the 6 weeks to actually get in shape.
So Corey Lee is the backup catcher with my plan. So your catchers would be Gary Sanchez and Corey Lee. Gavin Sheets is still around because he's cheap, $740,000. He's still getting paid a league minimum. He still doesn't qualify for arbitration, so I'm sure he'll stick around. And then, you know, whoever wins the triple cage fight between Zach Revelar and Romy Gonzalez. Oh, God. Oh, my gosh. I can't even finish. Whoever else. I just plugged in random names for the bench, all $740,000. Don't even bother investing in any bench players to start the season. Again, the headline is faux contention plan. And that's what this is. Like, if things click and the vibes are good, you got a lot of veterans on this team. Maybe you have a good April and May, and perhaps it changes some minds and you try to run with it as long as you possibly can. If it doesn't work out, well, then, yeah, you can have a fire sale again at the trade deadline. You buy half a season for your player development, brand new people in charge of that. Move aside Paul DeJong. It's Colson Montgomery time. No qualms with that. No headaches. No hurting anyone's feelings. Everyone knows the agenda. So that's what I was aiming for with my offseason plan. Like, a little bit of investment in hiring counsel and Jordan Montgomery, but to fill out the rest of the roster, short-term deals, sign aging veterans, promise them starting gigs, which you could provide starting gigs, and that could be a better selling point than being a platoon guy or a bench bat or a swing guy in someone's bullpen.
I think when it comes to this roster, you have to have somebody like counsel, because like, I'm picturing Pedro Grifol like managing an influx of veterans who have all been successful to like winning, you know, World Series titles with other teams, and all of a sudden coming into the White Sox, like, yeah, now you're going to get exposed to our culture. And like, what culture? Like, I could just picture a lot of eye rolls and dismissive hand gestures behind his back when he's trying to bring in, integrate all these veteran free agents into the fold. So it would take an accomplished manager who would actually have the respect of these players versus like players on 1 year deal looking to for bigger deals ahead. Like, I could see just Grifol caving in, and because, you know, he appeals to Jerry Reinsdorf just not getting fired and just being 2016 all over again in terms of except without like Adam LaRoche's kid involved.
Yeah, and there's a lot of comments that I see here, like with Trey Williams, the YouTube stream. So your plan is to sign a manager and a center fielder that won't sign here, overpay for a starter who won't be good when our new core is up, and replace Anderson with Dion. Amazing. Yeah, I mean, you want me to, I could be completely honest and be like, yeah, you just want to skip baseball in 2024? Like,
it's not the point of the plan.
The point of the offseason plan is, how do you build a contending team with what you got on hand? And that's why I love the ideas that people are bringing up with their offseason plans. This is, one, a horrible free agent market, especially the position player side. Like, you couldn't time this any worse if you're trying to rebuild a middle infield. Like, you just could not. And I think everyone is on the same plane here. It's like, yeah, we got to build a team to play in 2024 season. Your boss wants to contend. He's 87 years old, but he still wants to contend. So you got to please his demands. But you can't sacrifice anything that could impact 2025. Like, how do you balance that? And that's why this offseason plan has been harder than more recent seasons.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be realistic because, one, we don't know yet with the front office and what Jerry wants to actually own, or I should say wants to be able to spend. A realistic White Sox plan, I don't think you guys want to hear what that realistic White Sox plan is going to be. You may like my offseason plan a lot better than what the reality of what this team looks like in February.
Yeah, and it's more, you know, when it comes to the offseason plan too, it's more about like, hey, that's a decent argument for a free agent, or that's a good trade idea. So like, even if the plan entirely doesn't make sense, it's like putting the ideas out there that like, oh, I'm going to borrow from this plan. I'm going to borrow from this plan. Like, this might be a workable path. So it's basically like 1,000 monkeys at typewriters, you know, when it comes to trying to plan. Like, you might be able to get like one roster that actually breaks through and wins the World Series based on all these plans coming together. So that's the idea. So that's why, like, you know, when it comes to Kevin Kiermaier, like, yeah, like, probably won't sign the White Sox, but like, you can make an argument for signing him, and like, you can make the argument for putting funds towards him. So make the argument, and then we'll see how it weighs against or how it balances out against all the other needs that this team has. But yeah, in this case, like, this is one way to do it. It just requires, like, you know, it's a little bit like the 2005 White Sox. And if Rick Hahn were still running this team, say, well, we had a little bit of a team that
went
out in 1 year deals, and that team did pretty well, I seem to remember. And like, everybody rolling their eyes because it's failed every other time he's tried it. But like, that's the argument he would make. So you could do the same thing here and just, say like, nobody wanted Jermaine Dye on for more than 2 years. And nobody thought AJ Pierzynski was going to do like, and on and on and on. So.
Yeah,
it is the Rattan plan. So there you go.
Trey's counter to what I just said was that my team's a 90 loss team. And I agree. But you know what? I'm going to be a little Steve Stone here. That's an 11 win improvement, Trey. That's a big jump in Major League Baseball. So if my horrible team for this offseason plan wins 11 more games than the 2023 roster did, I'm chalking that up as a W. Especially with how poor my offseason plan was last year. the only realistic way for the 2024 White Sox to really bounce back and win the American League Central, Jim, Reinsdorf's going to need to spend like the Texas Rangers. And to come full circle this podcast episode, the Rangers have provided the blueprint. Like, you want to dramatically change things? Spend $500 million on Aaron Nola and Blake Snell and roll in with C. Snell and Nola to start your rotation. Go sign Cody Bellinger. Go sign Shohei Ohtani to like a 2-year contract because nobody really knows what's going to happen with Tommy John, but pay him $40 million to be your DH. Like, really, really spend some serious cash to change the outcome of your team. And if you're not willing to do that, then you got to piecemeal everything together and then hope for the best.
Yeah. Give Shohei Ohtani a 15-year contract with an opt-out after 2 years. That's basically what the White Sox have to do. But like, that's a case of like with Manny Machado, like they did not want to give him the opt out. Like Manny Machado on a 5-year, what was it? Trying to think of what the deal ended up being, like $140 million or something like that. Of his deal. Yeah. But anyway, like that would have been the perfect signing for him. And like him, like, opting out. Sure. Go leave. Like that's what we wanted to sign you to 5 years in the first place. So great. But Reinsdorf is so hell bent on like just making sure he cedes nothing to players or to labor. And opt out as a concession to labor. So he won't do that. The White Sox won't do that. They could have probably done that for Bryce Harper and didn't want to. They just ignored him altogether. So, the Phillies didn't give him an opt out. But I mean, like, if the White Sox offered him an opt out, like, probably, would have come down a price. So, there's so many things the White Sox could do to play in that kind of pool that doesn't require them, like, breaking the bank or ruining their budget for years, because teams often can get out from under those deals if it starts going sideways. There's always another team that has another bad deal to trade itself, and sometimes you can, salvage the situation some. And the White Sox just, they just rule it out, and so they have to get by on cutting corners and development, and they can't develop, and they don't cut corners well. So that's why they're just kind of stuck in this, like, we can overpay for decent players, and that's about it.
Yeah, we got this comment from Dark Sage on Twitch, which we do have a Twitch channel. Jerry Reinsdorf, I want to win now. Also, Jerry Reinsdorf, maybe next year. And that is.
We don't have a year to waste. Also, it's like we don't have a year to waste. Also, we wasted the last 6 years.
Yeah, but again, if you haven't submitted your offseason plan, you can still do so. Go on SoxMachine.com. If you don't like my plan, I don't like my plan. But that's what I'm rolling with for this upcoming offseason for the White Sox.
Be another Mikey.
I do have to say, though, my plan, 7 free agent signings, a firing of a manager, and hiring a new manager. Jim, what a great offseason that is from a content-making perspective. We'd be busy all the way to March. We'd be taken care of. Wouldn't have to worry about if the White Sox are to do anything in January. Like, my plan would keep us very busy.
Yeah, be so, the change you want to see there.
Exactly. Oh man, again, you go to SoxMachine.com to still submit your off-season plans. But that will do it for this episode of Sox Machine Live. Thank you guys so much for watching, and for those that are watching the live stream, our friends over at From the 108 are going to be start streaming at 8 p.m central time. You can go visit their channel at youtube.com/from the 108 and start watching them on what is now must see Thursdays for White Sox Twitter. And that's as far as with the promos. And again, if you just discovered Sox Machine Live or the Sox Machine podcast, you can subscribe to Sox Machine Live whenever we have new videos. We'll continue to produce more videos during the off season. Go to youtube.com/SoxMachine and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we always take the audio versions of Sox Machine Live and upload it into our podcast feed, which you can subscribe to the Sox Machine podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music. We're on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. We're at Sox Machine. You can follow me on those platforms as well, at SoxMachine_Josh. If you enjoy our work and you want more, you can get more by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/SoxMachine. We have our Sox Machine Town Hall presentation for our Patreon supporters next week. So again, a great example of getting more from us as we open up the curtain to talk about our upcoming plans for 2024 and beyond. Monthly plans start at $2, so we could save with an annual subscription. Again, sign up at patreon.com/SoxMachine. Sox Machine Live is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for watching and listening.